We're going to spend some time here at, considering a few statements of the Lord in the fifth chapter of Matthew, and that will be the lesson. Now, in Matthew 5, we have this very, very well-known sermon from Jesus, where he began with what is commonly called the Beatitudes, and immediately following the Beatitudes there in Matthew 5 and verse 13, he said, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, that it may give light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Well, these are probably pretty well-known words of Jesus to the Christian. And honestly, I think they're well-known words to the non-Christian. Folks out there in the world are usually pretty familiar with this idea of the salt of the earth and the light of the world. And this this kind of language and this kind of illustration has transferred even out into the world. So a lot of people know this kind of lingo, these kinds of statements, but what do they really mean? What do they mean for us specifically? And what does it have to do with my life? And how can I improve? How can I become better, become a better Christian, a better servant of Christ from these things? So my fear with this, as with anything in the Bible that has just been said over and over again, like you're the light of the world, you're the salt of the earth, and then let's move on and talk about some other things. Or, you know, let's briefly reference you are the light of the world. Let's briefly reference you're the salt of the earth. And instead of focusing and getting some grounding on what exactly these things mean, my fear is that we just aren't making good application from these, you know, great words of Christ that are so famous. And so that's kind of what I want to spend a few moments with you this evening talking to you about. So there's a problem among humans and humans that become Christians, and they're still human, and there's a lot of problems. But one thing I want to discuss with you this evening is we can have some bad temper sometimes. You know, we're not necessarily the most perfect when it comes to being temperate. Now, some people have a much a greater problem in the idea of temperance than other individuals do. And by temperance, I simply mean having control over oneself, having control over everything about oneself. And so we don't mean necessarily just flying off the handle in this violent rage and anger, although that would be considered a lack of temperance. But this idea of temperance, I think, goes much further than just having that kind of violent rage. It can go so far, I think, as just not having the control over our bodies to make the proper Christ-like, Christ-minded little tiny decisions of our day-to-day life. Because it may not be that every day we are tempted to fly off the handle in that violent rage. And there might be some of us that's really not a temptation for us. You know, that's not something that we just struggle with. And so, you know, but rather, I think one of the things that we should consider is our day-to-day attitude when we're out there in the world, being this light of the world, being this salt of the earth, and the little decisions that we make, the little things that we might allow to affect us. So I'll use the illustration of Walmart, because this is a, you know, Walmart is a challenge for me. So it might be for you as well, or maybe something else. But a lot of times I have a very bad attitude when I'm in Walmart. And, you know, I like Walmart, but it starts usually in the parking lot. You know, I see something in the parking lot and it takes me off, you know, and I get upset. So I'm walking in upset. And then I have a tendency to not be smiling, you know, the whole way through. I have a tendency to, not be the most, outgoing, friendly face. Depending on the people at the checkout, depending on who it is, they might turn my world around, or I might have some struggles with them as well. And all of this, is affecting my attitude. I use this illustration. It's just a simple, kind of ridiculous illustration. But I think it makes the point. We can apply this to anything. There's all kinds of things that affect us in our day-to-day life, that affect our attitudes, that get us down, that get us grumpy, that get us in those blues. And that kind of situation really blocks this ability to be a salt of the earth, light of the world kind of individual. So it's actually something very important that we need to give some thought to, and we need to make some conscious choices in our life. I have come across individuals in the church that have wondered and pondered, does it really matter what other people think about me? And I have seen individuals within the church that have had this very attitude of, I don't care what other people think about me. And I've seen it first in them within the congregation itself. They don't care what their brother thinks about them. You know, they're going to go their own way with their own mind. Now, these are the kinds of folks, mind you, that don't last too long, you know. They will not. Anyway, I've seen it. You may have seen it as well. I'm seeing some head nods, unfortunately, which means that you know what I'm talking about. But I don't care what other people think about me. Now, you don't have to say that. You don't have to say that to have that world view, as you live and walk this earth. But when we read Matthew 5, 13 through 16, and we look again at this, does it matter what people think about me? Or having this attitude, I don't care what people think about me. Well, that doesn't actually fit with what the Bible has just recorded for us in the words of Christ. If Christ has just told us, you are the salt of the earth, you are the light of the world, then I think that means that it does matter. It does matter. And this attitude of, I don't care what people think about me, this attitude is coming from an individual that is going to just stomp off and do their own thing, and they don't care. And this lesson has nothing to do with the persecutor, the one who is afflicting us for doing good. We're not dealing with that at all. There are going to be individuals that we will do good, we will choose good, and they will think very poorly of us. Okay? That's not this lesson. That's another lesson. So let's just kind of push that aside, because that's not at all what we're dealing with or what we're talking about. There's nothing we can do about, that their feelings towards us, and we have got to keep on keeping on and doing good and doing what Christ has commanded out of us. This lesson is about maintaining an attitude, maintaining a consciousness in our everyday world and work of knowing how the expression on my face, the tone, the words coming out of my mouth, everything has an effect. Everything matters. If Jesus says you are to be the salt of the earth and you're to be the light of the world, that tells me that everything I do matters. And so every day, every little decision that I make matters as to whether one might eventually obey the gospel or not. One might ask about the gospel, ask about Christ. Sometimes folks do that. Sometimes they just flat out ask about things, but they will never ask if they've never seen any difference out of us. They will never ask if we are not being that salt, you know, that they get a good taste of, or that light that, you know, that they start to come around to. They'd like seeing that light around, you know, in the world of darkness. They're starting to like having that light around, and they might ask. So we need to be ready for that. But if the light is not shining, if the salt is tasteless, then there's no one interested in that. This first illustration that Jesus gave here in verse 13 is if the salt loses its flavor. He says, if that happens, it's good for nothing. It's to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. Now, a lot of what we're dealing with here in the text, we have to go back to the first century, because the kind of salt that you have, you know, sitting in, you know, in on your table or in your pantry is going to be significantly different than the salt that they had in those days. We have a much more pure version, and they had a lot of impurities in their salt. And so we often don't think about, you know, our salt losing our flavor, or, you know, a while goes by and we say, well, let's go ahead and check the salt in the cabinet and make sure it's still good and salty. You know, no one ever thinks about that. It's not even an issue. But in those days, it was more of an issue because of the impurities. There were other things kind of intermingled there in the gathering of salt. There were other elements, and there's certain elements out there that can fairly quickly and over time, and depending on the element, can cause salt to lose its saltiness, to lose its flavor. And so what does it become? It just becomes a grain. It's not good for taste. It's not good for food. It's just a grain. And that's what Jesus says. It's good for nothing but to be thrown underfoot and trampled underfoot by man. It's because that's what they did. They had a lot of impurities. This was a problem that came up. And so what do you now do with the salt that has lost its saltiness? Well, it's now gravel. It's now sand. Make a pathway out of it, you know. Put it in the pathway of your house. And that's exactly what they would do back in those days. And so that's what he means by it's not good for anything. So it's thrown on the ground now. And it's used as a pathway. That's the first thing that we see out of this text. So salt can lose its flavor when it's intermingled with other elements that cause it to no longer be savory. Now, what's the illustration here for our lives? He says, you're the salt of the earth. He says, but if the salt loses its flavor, it's good for nothing. Now, when salt loses its flavor, it's because it's been contaminated, because it's been intermingled with impurities. So, if we are the salt of the earth in the illustration, how would we, as Christians, lose our savor, or our flavor, or our saltiness? Well, In the same way in the illustration goes, contamination. Christians become contaminated with impurities. They intermingle themselves. They store themselves with things that are not right. And, you know, they brush elbows with influences that shouldn't be around. There are all kinds of different things that can happen by which a Christian can become contaminated. And so it is now no longer a pure individual. And so in dealing with these impurities, this individual loses their flavor. They lose that ability for other people to experience Christ, to experience the mind of Christ, the ways of Christ, the words of Christ, because all that's been contaminated now. And folks are not interested in an individual that, yeah, they might hear that so and so, you know, goes to church, but they're doing all kinds of other things at work or what have you, you know, that and the way that they're talking, and it's just it's dirty and it's impure, and the things that they're joking about, things that they're engaging in conversation about is impure. The things people see them doing is impure, whatever the case may be. And to everyone else, sure, they might know you go to church, but quite frankly, the salt has lost its flavor. So, that's the first part. Now, the second part of this is where it gets interesting when you start to look back at the original Greek. So, we've understood what it means for salt or how salt would lose its flavor. But if you look at the original Greek word for loses its flavor, those three English words is one Greek word. And literally, that word means to be foolish, to act foolishly, or to make foolish. That's a surprising word picture. That's probably not what you expected out of the translation of the salt losing its flavor. The word that is used here in the original Greek, meaning to be foolish or to act foolishly. That's the contamination that Jesus is talking about. And so we become contaminated as Christians in dabbling in what is wrong, dabbling in what is sinful and what is evil. And so we begin to act like the world. We begin not to act like a wise individual, like a wise soldier of Christ, like a wise salt of the earth and light of the world, not one who's living with that consciousness of here I am today and what I do is going to affect other people's salvation, and everything that I do is matters, and the way in which I twist my lip and, you know, in the tone of my voice and everything. Every conversation that I engage in is going to matter. But here, what we're reading about is an individual who is now acting foolishly. So that's the completely other side of the coin. So Jesus, what he's talking about here, when he says, when the salt loses its flavor, is you're the salt of the earth. Well, when you begin to be out there and you begin to act like a fool, You're not longer acting like Christ. You're no longer living that example for the world in which you ought to be living in. He says, you are good for nothing. Now, that's some strong speech. But it's true. What can we do now? When we've placed ourselves in that kind of situation, what can we do? How can we further the kingdom? How are we growing as a Christian that day? How are we maturing? We just don't mature when we're acting foolish. How are we learning? How are we building good experience upon good experience of sharing the light, sharing the gospel, sharing the good things of Jesus Christ? How are we doing any of that? We're not. There is nothing good that we can do when we start to sway over to this kind of daily life of the salt losing its flavor, the salt beginning to act foolishly and is no longer good at all for Christ and His kingdom. So, His first illustration again in verse 13, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men." Now in verse 14, he presents another illustration. "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, that it gives light to all who are in the house." So in this next illustration, as he begins to talk about letting one's light shine, he says, again, similar language from "You're the salt of the earth." He says, "You're the light of the world." So he's talking about the same things, two different illustrations. Jesus ever done that before? Yes, he has. Parable after parable. "The kingdom of heaven is like this." And he says, and then another parable. "The kingdom of heaven is like this." Illustration after illustration, parable after parable. And this kind of repetition is how Jesus very commonly taught the multitude. So he's dealing with the same things here, but it's a different illustration. This time he's talking about light. And the picture that he's painting here, verse 15, is that of a house, as you can see as you get down to the end of verse 15, about giving light to all who are in the house. And so he's talking about the common people. He's drawing an illustration from the common people because back then it was common to have one room in the house. The house was one room. And so there, one light gave light to all who are in the house because all who are in the house are in that one room. So that's how the light could give light to all who are in the house. And this idea here of putting it under a basket, he says, or the King James says bushel, putting it under a bushel. A common implement in the houses of those days was a measuring bowl of several, it would amount to in the U.S. Several gallons. And this bowl, it could have been used for all kinds of things, just, you know, mixing things, you know, mixing bread or what have you. But it was technically a measuring device. And so it was a fairly good size bowl, you know, probably similar to a larger mixing bowl that we would have today. And their lamps were oil lamps, and it wasn't necessarily in every house, but it was a common thing when you're looking at an oil lamp and the size of an oil lamp and how to put the oil lamp out. The bushel, the mixing bowl of sorts, the big measuring bowl, was a really good size to just put right over and snuff out the fire for the night or what have you. So when he's talking about this hiding it under a bushel or putting it under a bushel or putting it under a basket here in verse 15, he's talking about snuffing it out. And so when he's saying here, "Let your light shine," and he says, do not hide it under a basket or a bushel. What is this hiding? Because that's what the kids, you know, sing about this little light of mine. I'm going to let it shine, you know, hide it under a bushel. But this hiding, let's not get this illustration in our mind that hiding it under a bushel is as if it's still lit. Like it's still going to be there, because it's not. When it's hid under the bushel, when it's hid under the basket, that's for the purpose of it being snuffed out. There's no more light. There's no more light under that bushel. You can take a peek under there. It's not going to be there. You can take that bushel off. No light. Just smoke. So, what Jesus is talking about here is putting that light out. Let's not suppose that we as Christians can be out there in the world, and think that we have a light when we are, you know, hiding it in front of whoever it might be. If we're hiding it, it's gone. We got to understand that that light is gone. Now, it certainly can be relit, and there can be course corrections here by all means. But let's not make the mistake that it's inside of us. You know, it's in our heart, but we're just not going to reveal it to certain people. Or, you know, we just have a bad attitude that day. We're just struggling that day for whatever the reason. So we're just not going to let it just blast out. No, if it's hidden, it's put out. It's put out for the time. So he says, do not hide it. Do not put it under a bushel. Do not put it under a basket. He says, but rather put it on a lampstand so that it can give light to all who are in the house. So the instruction of Jesus is that light is not to be put out. It's rather to be put on display. So it's not a small light off in the corner. It's not a small light off and away, but it is the only source of light around that folks can see. And it is there, and it is prevalent, because he's picturing this one-room household, and the difference is one light or no light. Now, that's a huge difference in that one-room household. One light or no light. What will it be? So letting the light shine, as he's talking about here, is really significant. We're really putting ourselves out there. We're really trying, and this is going to take us trying. This is going to take work and toil. It's our work for Christ to show the gospel to other individuals. He said, let your light shine so that. You know, if you look at the Greek word so, he's not saying here, let your light so shine so. You know, using that word so as an emphasis. It's not a word of emphasis. If you look back in the Greek again, it's not a word of emphasis. The word so there means in this way or in this manner, in this fashion. So let your light shine in this fashion. What fashion? Verse 16. That they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. So, how are we letting our light shine? What is the fashion? What is the manner or the way by which we're letting our light shine? He identifies it here. The good works. You know, the word good there means virtuous, valuable. Valuable works. So this refers to us being out in the world, being a good different, having essentially a display. We're not doing it in the private. We're not doing it secretly. We are showing good works. And this is what Jesus would have us to do. He wants us to show the world our works in Him. Show the world what it is and what it's like to be a Christian, to be a servant of Jesus Christ, and to do what it's like to do the kind of works that He has commanded out of us. And following this, this is what's so important about this entire text here from verse 13 through 16, is the final result. It said that they would see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. That they would make a decision, that is. A decision is going to be made on their part whether they are going to honor God, glorify God in their life or not. And so we have an intention here to show them in such a way that they have seen it, they have experienced it, they know it. It's not little things. They have truly seen it. It has been so well exposed to them what it is to be a true servant of Jesus Christ that they would make that decision. And so that's what Jesus is dealing with here in this text. So you're the salt of the earth. Why? Why should I choose that way? Why should I choose that path? So someone else would be saved. For our salvation as well. I mean, if we're not this way, we're not servants of Christ. We're not disciples of Christ. We're not setting forth the example of Christ. When we walk around saying, I don't really care what other people think about me. It doesn't matter what people think about me, what people say about me. I don't care. Walk around grumpy, complaining, spouting off about this or that, whatever it might be. Is that kind of daily decision going to bring the effect of one coming to honor God themselves? See, this life is all cause and effect. We can't forget that. It's all cause and effect. So the little choices that I make out in the world, and even all the big ones, of course, as well, they're going to have an effect on everyone else. And this just, Jesus is talking about the world, but we can apply this to the home as well. To the home, what the children see, you know, what works are the children seeing? What kind of attributes, attitudes, and characteristics are shining forth, you know, within the home, that they would see that fully exposed and that they would make the decision to give glory and honor to God in their life as they grow up to make that decision. So there's a lot of application from this text, even though Jesus is specifically talking about when we are out and about in the world. So I just wanted to talk about those few things with you this evening now. So this evening, so that we could be a little bit more conscious about the choices that we make, big or small, a little bit conscious about the kind of attitudes that we'll have, a little bit more in control of ourselves, a little bit more temperate from today on out. So I appreciate your attention this evening. If there is anyone here who needs the help, prayers of the congregation in any way,